Welcome to the DME MaxCert Education Task Force Ask the Contractor teleconference. All lines will remain in a listen-only mode until the question and answer session. Today's conference is being recorded and transcribed. If anyone has any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now turn our conference over to Ms. Shauna O'Shan with Centers of Medicare and Medicaid Services. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, Chrissy. Please switch to slide two. Thank you, everyone, and welcome to the first in what we hope will be a series of collaborative contractor education offerings by the DME Medicare Administrative Contractors on the Comprehensive Error Rate Testing Program, which you all probably have heard referred to as CERT. My name is Shauna Olchan, and I am the Division Director for the Division of Contractor Provider Communications at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Today's call is being recorded and will be offered as an encore presentation available on all four DME MAC websites in the next 1 to 2 weeks. You will receive a listserv message from your DME MAC letting you know when the encore recording, FAQs, and written responses to your questions are available. Today's Ask the Contractor teleconference will introduce you to a new initiative which has been created and implemented by your DME MACs in jurisdictions A, B, C, and D. Their goal is to work together to improve knowledge and performance related to the CERT program and to centralize education to present a single educational message to suppliers throughout the United States. This unique approach to education first came to our attention here at CMS when contractor executives from all four DME MACs met with us to discuss the impact that additional review findings were having on Medicare suppliers. What resulted was the collaboration of all DME MACs and the formation of this DME MAC CERT Education Task Force. Since March 2009, the task force has been developing focused education on the CERT program, which we believe will have a positive impact not only on the reduction of common errors, but will also support our need to reduce inappropriate payments for those errors. As we've all seen over the past few months, there is immediate need to reduce fraud and abuse in the Medicare program. As part of the Obama administration's goal of reducing waste, fraud, and abuse in Medicare, the Department of Health and Human Services and CMS significantly revised and improved the calculations of Medicare fee-for-service error rates in 2009. As suppliers of medical equipment, you've already seen how these improvements have led to increased review of your claims and increased requests for additional documentation to support payment of those claims. Education developed by the DME MAC CERT Education Task Force has been designed to help you avoid the very errors which continue to generate improper payments, as well as reviews of your claims by the CERT contractors. While improper payments are not necessarily an indicator of fraud in Medicare or any other federal health care program, they do provide those of us with fiscal responsibility for oversight of the trust fund a more complete assessment of what errors are occurring and how many errors need to be fixed. And that is where the DME MAC CERT Education Task Force plays an important role. I am very excited about this task force because I believe that having the MACs work together in this way will help improve the consistency of information that suppliers receive, thereby improving the education, reducing incorrect billing by suppliers, and improving the overall care for the Medicare beneficiary. Please take advantage of the collaborative educational efforts that this task force has already developed and will continue to do so in the future. And slide three, please. So here to introduce you to the task force and their collaborative educational initiatives for 2010 is John Kelly with Cigna Government Services.
Thank you, Shauna. Hello, everyone. I'd like to thank CMS for not only providing the forum for today's call, but for also sharing our vision for consistent education in support of reduced errors, waste, fraud, and abuse of the Medicare program. I'd like to take just a moment to explain how today's call will work. Representatives from all four DME MAC contracts will present information specific to the CERT program, and they will provide you with a lot of very valuable information. References and additional education opportunities will be available to you at the conclusion of today's call. I'd also like to let you know that today's call is not a forum to discuss specific claim issues. Our focus today is on the launch of a new multi-DME MAC contractor initiative to support you and CMS in reducing errors identified through the improved Comprehensive Error Rate Testing or CERT process. For purposes of introducing new CERT education initiatives, we do not have medical director representation on today's call. We do plan, however, as part of our comprehensive education strategy, to provide opportunities in the near future to conduct education that will include medical director education related to CERT. Slide 4, please. Joining us today are Don Hermes with the NGS Provider Outreach and Education Team serving Jurisdiction B, Jody Witten, Education Representative with Noridian Administrative Services for Jurisdiction D, Denise Winsock, Provider Outreach and Education for NHIC and Jurisdiction A, James Herron, Cigna Government Services, Provider Outreach and Education for Jurisdiction C, and Amy Capice, PCSP and Outreach Education Manager for NHIC, also serving Jurisdiction A. Together, we represent the 15 members of the DME MAC CERT Education Task Force. Moving on to slide 5. During today's call, we will introduce you to the task force and learn what CERT is and how it is performed. We will also talk extensively about medical records requests and the importance of responding to those requests. We will provide information on the CERT appeals process, provide education on the most frequent errors across the country, and then provide you with valuable resources for additional information. Slide 6, please. The DME MAC CERT Education Task Force is unique to the Medicare program. It is the first multi-contract collaboration since implementation of the Medicare Modernization Act of 2003, which mandated competitive bidding for all Medicare business. It is also unique in that it is the first time contractors have worked together to develop a consistent educational message for all Medicare suppliers that is focused specifically on the CERT program. The value of the task force was introduced to Medicare contractors at the Provider Customer Service Program Conference in October of 2009, and participants at the MedTrade East Conference in Atlanta were given a preview of our education during a special workshop. Today, you will learn how our focused education will help you so you can begin reducing common errors. Slide 7, please. That's the history of who we are and what we plan to accomplish as we develop a unified, consistent educational message on the CERT program. And now here to talk with you about the CERT program and how it is performed is Dawn Hermes with Jurisdiction B. Dawn?
Thank you, John. On slide 8, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services implemented the Comprehensive Error Rate Testing Program, otherwise known as CERT, to comply with the Improper Payments Information Act of 2002. The first CERT improper payment report was published in November of 2003. The main objective of the CERT program is to protect the Medicare Trust Fund. To do this, CERT reviews randomly selected claims for accuracy of the claim submission, processing, and payment, therefore ensuring that claims submitted to the Medicare program are coded and paid according to the Medicare guidelines. CERT releases a biannual report to provide suppliers, contractors, and CMS with their results. These reports are usually released in November and May. The results, along with the contractor's internal breakdown of the CERT data, is used to help develop appropriate educational material and to determine local, regional, and national error rate patterns. Incorrect payments take money from the Medicare Trust Fund. CERT finds the incorrect payment and restores the trust fund. This information is used by CMS and the contractors to prevent future improper payments. On slide 9, this shows how CERT is performed. The CERT documentation contractor, or CERT DC, is responsible for requesting the medical records. Once the randomly selected claim has finalized, the CERT DC will request documentation. The documentation is then scanned and sent to the CERT review contractor to determine if the service or treatment documented is the service or treatment billed and that the documentation supports medical necessity. CERT does provide a web page, which is www.certprovider.org. Again, that's www.certprovider.org for suppliers so that you can update your contact information. You may also call the CERT DC customer service line at 888-779-7477. Again, the customer service line is 888-779-7477 and ask them to make the updates to their system. The information that the CERT DC needs to make sure that they can contact you correctly are a correct mailing address, a correct phone number, correct fax number, and your provider ID. And if possible, a point of contact who may be responsible for gathering your documentation request. On slide 10, once the documentation is received, the CERT DC scans the records and supplies them to the CERT Review Contractor, or the CRC. AdvanceMed has a medical director and licensed medical professionals who review the documentation. They use local coverage determinations and CMS Medicare guidelines to make their determinations as to whether the service has been paid correctly or if an error exists. Biannually, in May and November, the CRC gathers the data from the reviews and uses it to calculate the error rates. Slide 11 explains what is contained in the letter of request for medical records. The request will always contain the official CMS logo, which you will see on the next couple slides. The letter will have identified a beneficiary for whom CERT is requesting medical records. You will find a barcoded cover sheet enclosed with the letter, which includes the control number, a patient's name, provider type, and contractor type, as well as the CID number. Each control number corresponds to each identified beneficiary, and each beneficiary will have their own CERT identification or CID number assigned. The CID number is how CERT protects personal health information and how they track the medical records once they receive them. The letters will instruct you on what type of documentation is needed and how to submit the documentation to the CERT DC. Suppliers are being asked to supply records in accordance with all Medicare guidelines, not just local coverage determination, as it is stated in the Program Integrity Manual. However, neither a physician's order, nor a CMN, nor a DIF, nor a supplier-prepared statement, nor a physician attestation by itself provides sufficient documentation of medical necessity, even though it is signed by the treating physician or supplier. There must be information in the patient's medical record that supports the medical necessity for the item and substantiates the answers on the CMN, if applicable, or DIF, if applicable, or information on a supplier-prepared statement or physician attestation, if applicable. The CERT contractor is reviewing records to substantiate the answers provided by the physicians. On slide 12, this will show you an example of the first CERT request letter. It is basically giving you a brief description of what CERT is, notifying you that your business has one or more claims that have been randomly selected for the review, that responding to this request in no way violates the HIPAA Act, and most important, that failure to respond to this request will result in an error and the recoupment of money. On slide 13, this shows you what the barcode cover sheet looks like. The barcode in the middle of the sheet shows the CID number. This sheet is to be placed in front of the medical records submitted so that the CERT DC can use the CID number to track and identify the beneficiary to the correct records. Below the barcode is a list of documentation the CERT contractor may require to help support the medical review of the claim. They ask for any pertinent medical records and any additional documentation that you feel may help to support the claim for the specified dates of service and specified Benny. They also remind you to copy both front and back of all records and to make sure that you do not cut off any of the record's edges. Please review your copies for legibility and completeness prior to submission to the CERT documentation contractor. And finally, on slide 14, this shows you a copy of the envelope that the requests arrive in. You should place this as a high priority as to respond in a timely manner to any of the CERT requests that you receive. The time limit to respond to CERT is 75 days. Again, I would like to remind you of the importance of responding to the CERT contractor. Please verify that the address, phone number, and point of contact are up to date in their systems or on the webpage portal. Thank you, And now James Herron will talk to you about responding to the CERT questions. James?
Thank you, Dawn. My name is James Herron, and I am Provider Outreach and Education Representative for Cigna Government Services and Jurisdiction C. This is slide 15, I'm sorry. Now let's move on to slide 16. It is the supplier's responsibility to, one, obtain the documentation needed to support the medical necessity of the equipment being supplied. If the physician does not provide you with the documentation that you request, you can explain to them that it is stated in the program integrity manual, for any DMEPOS item to be covered by Medicare, the patient's medical record must contain sufficient documentation of the patient's medical condition to substantiate the necessity for the type and quantity of items ordered, and for the frequency of use or replacement if applicable. The information should include the patient's diagnosis and other pertinent information, including but not limited to duration of the patient's condition, clinical course, whether it's worsening or improving, the prognosis, nature and extent of functional limitations, other therapeutic interventions and results, both past experience with related items, etc. It also states there must be information in the patient's medical record that supports the medical necessity for the item and substantiates the answers on the CMN or DIF, if applicable, or information on a supplier-prepared statement or physician attestation form, if applicable. If the physician continues to refuse to cooperate with your request for documentation, you could always inform them that your company will not be able to supply the equipment as ordered until this information has been provided. CMS also considers it the responsibility of the supplier to ensure documentation of this medical need can be obtained and forwarded to the appropriate contractor within the specified time frame. If your business has multiple locations, but you would prefer all CERT requests are mailed to a specific location, you may update that information at the CERT contractor's website, which is www.certprovider.org. Again, that's www.certprovider, that's one word, .org. Let's move on to slide 17, please. Let's review some of the rules and regulations that apply. For any item to be covered by Medicare, it must, one, be eligible for a defined Medicare benefit category, two, be reasonable and necessary for the diagnosis or treatment of illness or injury or to improve the functioning of a malformed body member, and three, meet all other applicable Medicare statutory and regulatory requirements. For the items addressed in this medical policy, the criteria for reasonable and necessary are defined by the following indications and limitations of coverage and/or medical necessity. Slide 18, please. Upon reviewing the documentation requirements, we remind you that the Social Security Act precludes payment to any provider of services unless there has been furnished such information as may be necessary in order to determine the amounts due such provider. It is expected that the patient's medical records will reflect the need for the care provided. The patient's medical records include the physician's office records, hospital records, nursing home records, home health agency records, records from other healthcare professionals, and test reports. This documentation must be made available upon request. Slide 19, please. So what medical records are necessary? To help determine that, you should ask yourself if the items fit a Medicare benefit category or whether the item is medically reasonable and necessary. You should ask if there is documentation to support the item and whether the item is coded and billed correctly, and that's just to name a few. And note, we do have others listed on this slide. On slide 20, you'll see that the next question to ask is what medical records are necessary. The documentation sent to the CERT review contractor should include information such as the patient's diagnosis, duration of the patient's condition, whether the clinical course is improving or getting worse, the nature and extent of any functional limitation and prognosis, and just as an example. To verify the appropriate coding, the PDAC is an excellent resource. You can obtain additional information from their website at www.dmepdac.com, and again, that's www.dmepdac.com, or by calling 877-735-1326, 877-735-1326. You may also refer to the supplier manual, LCD, and policy articles, and your contractor's website for additional coverage information. On slide 21, please. There may be times when, due to unusual circumstances, your documentation may be lost due to a disaster such as a hurricane. It is important to note that even if your documentation is compromised, you are still obligated to respond to requests for this information. You should complete the disaster attestation form and return it with the barcoded sheet Dawn referenced on slide 13. This will alert the CERT contractor to your particular issue and may result in no error being called on the claim or the claims that are under review. The disaster attestation form can be found at www.certprovider.org, and again, that's www.certprovider.org. Slide 22, please. There are three ways to respond to a request from the CERT contractor, and that's by fax, mail, or you can put your records on a CD and mail that to them. We have provided that information for you on slide 22. You are encouraged to keep this contact information for future use. It is also available on all DME MAC websites as well as the CMS website should you need it at a later date. Slide 23, please. Keep in mind that you are entitled to appeal a CERT determination. Once the overpayment letter is received, requesting the redetermination within 30 days will help avoid an offset. When requesting an appeal for CERT recoupment, it is helpful to include a copy of the CERT overpayment request with your appeal. Keep in mind you do have 120 days to submit your request, and it must be submitted in writing. For additional information on this, please visit your DME MAC contractor's website. All DME MACs have extensive information and education available on the appeals process. Slide 24, please. Now let's talk about the common errors in the CERT program. The DME MAC CERT Education Task Force has identified the top six most frequent errors across the United States. These top errors are based on analysis of CERT data. Those areas with the most errors are oxygen, diabetic supplies, power mobility devices and wheelchairs, nebulizers and drugs, enteral nutrition, and positive airway pressure devices. Slide 25, please. While recent program changes have generated a lot of discussion regarding submission of oxygen claims, the primary reason for errors are incomplete medical records and lack of physician documentation to support payment. As is written in the LCD, or the Local Coverage Determination, you are reminded that in a review you may be asked to provide a copy of the actual test report and or information from the medical record to verify that coverage criteria have been met. Of particular importance is your ability to prove through medical records and documentation that the patient has been seen and evaluated by the treating physician within 30 days prior to the date of initial certification. This is outlined in the oxygen policy. We recognize that it may sometimes be difficult to obtain information, to obtain the information you need from the treating physician. In those cases, since payment of your claims are impacted, you will need to insist the treating physician provide you all required information before submitting a claim. You should also ensure that documentation contains a legible physician identifier in addition to all other required data such as beneficiary history using oxygen, clearly documented saturation test levels, etc. Now at this time, I'll ask Jody Witten to share some helpful information on diabetic supplies and power mobility. Jody?
Thank you, James. And now we're going to move on to slide 26. Again, my name is Jody Witten, and I'm an education representative for Jurisdiction D DME MAC. I'm going to speak about documentation requirements for diabetic testing supplies and power mobility devices and wheelchairs, and what the CERT contractor is finding as insufficient or missing documentation. I'll be covering a lot of information on the next two slides, so just to warn you. As a reminder, all the DME MAC contractors, as James has mentioned, have information published on their website for you to review. Let's go to slide 27. So first off, let's talk about diabetic supplies and how the physician order is incomplete or missing. A common theme with a lot of CERT errors revolve around the order. Most durable medical equipment, prosthetics, orthotics, and supplies may be dispensed based on a verbal dispensing order. We sometimes refer to this as a preliminary order as well. Make sure that initial order is well documented within your place of business and has enough elements for you to appropriately dispense the item that's being prescribed. At a minimum, be sure to document a description of the item, the beneficiary's name, the physician's name, and the start date of that order. Also make sure that the order comes from an individual qualified and authorized to order DMEPOS items, a physician, a nurse practitioner, a clinical nurse specialist, or a physician assistant. If you dispensed an item based on a preliminary order, you must follow up with a completely detailed written order prior to claim submission. For diabetic testing supplies, this must include all items, the specific frequency of testing, the treating physician's signature, the date that the treating physician signed that order, and the start date, especially if it's being dispensed based on that preliminary order. An order that only states as needed or PRN will result in a review as being denied as not medically necessary. A new order needs to be obtained when there is a change in the testing frequency, so that's something important to note as well. Now let's move on to the beneficiary's testing log and justification for the testing frequency. The quantity of testing strips, lancets, replacement lens shield cartridges that are covered by Medicare is determined by whether the beneficiary is being treated with insulin or not. For beneficiaries who are being treated with insulin, Medicare allows up to 100 test strips, 100 lancets, and one lens shield cartridge every month. For beneficiaries who are not being treated with insulin, Medicare allows up to 100 test strips, 100 lancets, and one lens shield cartridge every 3 months. There's additional coverage criteria that must be met if the treating physician feels the beneficiary needs to test more often. One of those criteria is there must be proof that the patient is actually testing at a frequency that corroborates the quantity of supplies that have been dispensed. That proof can come from the physician's records, such as maybe a narrative statement in the beneficiary's medical record, or maybe that physician has the actual testing beneficiary's testing log, or it could come from supplier's records as well. Maybe the supplier has a copy of the beneficiary's testing logs. So be prepared to provide this documentation if requested. For patients testing above the policy limit, not only do you need an order for the testing that exceeds the guidelines, but the treating physician has documented in the patient's medical record the specific reason for the additional material for that particular patient. Again, be prepared to provide this upon review as well. No physician medical record to support the diagnosis. As you know, glucose monitors and testing supplies are covered by Medicare for persons with diabetes. That would be a ICD-9 code range of 249.00 through 250.93. Not only does the ICD-9 code on the claim that you submit need to fall within that range, but it must be supported by medical records, so be prepared to provide those medical records again upon request. No documentation to show testing as prescribed or beneficiary is not testing as prescribed or conflicting documentation. Suppliers must not dispense a quantity of supplies that exceeds the beneficiary's expected utilization. Suppliers need to stay attuned to the atypical utilization patterns on behalf of their clients and verify with the ordering physician that that atypical utilization is in fact warranted, because if it's not, you may need to go back and get, you know, another order to justify that. An order refill does not have to be approved by the ordering physician if it's still currently valid. However, a beneficiary or their caregiver must specifically request refills of testing supplies before they are dispensed. The supplier must not automatically dispense a quantity of supplies on a predetermined basis, even if the beneficiary has authorized this in advance. As referenced in the CMS Program Integrity Manual, contact with the beneficiary or designee regarding refills should take place no sooner than approximately 7 days prior to the delivery shipping date. For subsequent deliveries for refills, the supplier should deliver the DemiPost product no sooner than approximately 5 days prior to the end of the usage of that current product. Finally, I'm almost there. No legible physician identifier. Medicare contractors require a legible identifier for services that are provided or ordered. It further requires that when the documentation is for medical review purposes, the only acceptable method of documenting the provider's signature is by written or electronic signatures. Signature stamps are not acceptable to sign orders or other medical records for medical review purposes. Now on to slide 28. Let's talk about power mobility devices. In the previous slide, I mentioned that most DemiPost items can be dispensed based on a preliminary verbal dispensing order. Power mobility devices, however, are not one of those items. The PMD policy has very specific requirements when it comes to a face-to-face examination, the order, which we refer to as a seven-element order, the detailed product description, home assessment, and medical records. So please make sure you read that documentation section of the LCD very carefully, as well as the policy article regarding the face-to-face examination. Some of the areas of concerns are there's no physician documentation of mobility limitation to support that the medical need for the equipment. No physician documentation justifying the power option is needed over a manual wheelchair. And no physician face-to-face visit is documented at all. So prior to dispensing a PMD, the beneficiary must have a thorough face-to-face examination with their treating physician to assess the patient's need for the power mobility device and what device will help that beneficiary to complete their mobility-related activities of daily living, feeding, grooming, that kind of stuff. The physician may refer the patient to a licensed, certified medical professional. This referral can take place before or after the physician's face-to-face examination, but it does not take the place of that face-to-face examination with the treating physician who's going to complete that seven-element order. The evaluation should be tailored to the individual patient's condition. The history should paint a picture of the patient's functional abilities and limitations on a typical day. It should contain as much objective data as possible. The physical examination should be focused on the body systems that are responsible for the patient's ambulatory difficulties or impact on the beneficiary's ambulatory abilities. Another area of CERT concern is that the patient is ambulatory and doesn't qualify for the wheelchair or the PMD. Although patients who qualify for coverage of a PMD may use that device outside the home, because Medicare's coverage of a wheelchair or a PMD is determined solely by the patient's mobility needs within the home, the examination must clearly distinguish the patient's ability and needs within the home from additional needs for use outside the home. So again, refer to that LCD and make sure all the basic coverage criteria are met for the wheelchair or the PMD, as well as specific coverage criteria based on what is going to be dispensed to that beneficiary. Additional coverage criteria for wheelchairs and power mobility device options and accessories can be located in that particular LCD and policy article as well, which is titled Wheelchair Options and Accessories. I realize I've shared a great deal of information relating to diabetic supplies and power mobility devices, but again, I encourage you to visit your contractor's website for detailed information and what education is available. And now to speak about nebulizers and drugs, enteral nutrition, and PAP and supplies is Denise Winsock from Jurisdiction A. Denise?
Thank you, Jody. I am going to review the next three policies which CERT has cited for missing documentation. And slide 30, the next frequent CERT error is for nebulizers and nebulizer drugs, which commonly denied for the following reasons: missing documentation to support the reason for the airway issues and current need. The nebulizer LCD lists the specific ICD-9 diagnosis codes, which qualify a patient for a specific nebulizer drug. Be sure the drug that is provided is covered for the patient's specific diagnosis. Next, no documentation was provided, such as chart notes, to indicate that the patient is compliantly using the nebulizer as prescribed. Documentation supporting medical necessity is missing or does not support the need for these items. Such documentation would consist of the order, the patient's medical record, and the pertinent diagnosis codes. And again, this list is not all-inclusive. Documentation is missing that identifies the continued need for the specific types of medication and or their frequency. The treating physician should have ongoing records to show the continued need for the nebulizer and drugs and the patient's compliance to the treating physician's treatment plan for the aerosol treatment. And another common reason, error for not submitting a valid physician order, the order for any drug must clearly specify the type of solution to be dispensed to the patient and the administration instructions for the solution. The type of solution is described by a combination of A, the name of the drug, and the concentration of the drug in the dispensed solution and the volume of solution in each container, or B, the name of the drug and the number of milligrams or grams of drug in the dispensed solution and the volume of solution in that container. A new order is required if there is a change in the type of solution dispensed or the administration instructions. For all inhalation drugs, a new order is required at least every 12 months, even if the prescription has not changed. Missing this type of detail results in an invalid order. And lastly, an order that is signed after the claim was submitted is not valid. A valid detailed written order must be received prior to claim submission. If not, the claim must be submitted with an EY modifier. And it is extremely important that you refer to the documentation section of the specific LCD for a complete list of documentation requirements. Slide 31. The next policy is enteral nutrition. The common errors for this policy that have been identified by CERT include the following. The requested documentation was not submitted to CERT. Please be sure to respond timely to all CERT requests and to provide the requested information. For records that were submitted, many were insufficient to show the medical need for the nutrition initially or the continued need for the nutrition based on the data service in question. Specifically, clinical documentation to support the qualifying specific medical condition and need for the special nutrient. The DME information form, or DIF, was not submitted for review. The DIF is required for enteral supplies and must be submitted with a CERT request. The DIF for enteral nutrition is CMS form 10126. And finally, the order for the pump and or supply kits was not submitted. Items billed before a signed and dated order is received by the supplier must be submitted again with an EY modifier. This modifier must be added to each affected HCPCS code. And to avoid these common errors identified by CERT, this documentation must be provided in the event that the CERT contractor contacts you requesting documentation on your enteral claims. Slide 32. Our last policy group is positive airway pressure and supplies, or PAP, and claims have been cited for not having the following information. There is no documentation showing that the beneficiary is compliantly using the PAP device. Sleep study documentation was not submitted with the request. Documentation of a physician face-to-face clinical evaluation by the treating physician prior to the sleep test to assess the patient for obstructive sleep apnea. Physician notes documenting the continued need for the PAP device were not submitted. Physician notes proving medical management of the patient were missing. The physician order was either not submitted or was invalid as a result of not having a physician's signature on the order. And remember that stamped signatures are no longer acceptable. Detailed written orders may take the form of a photocopy, a facsimile image, electronically maintained, or original pen and ink document. And this does apply to all orders, not only PAP. And it is not uncommon for the provider outreach and education teams to frequently get asked if providers need to have all the required chart notes and documentation in their patients' files prior to submitting their claims to Medicare. The answer that is typically given is that while it's not required, it is highly recommended that you obtain this information up front because it will help you to determine if there is sufficient documentation available to support the services you are about to render. And by obtaining the documentation sooner rather than later, you can gain confidence that when a claim is chosen for CERT, you will have access to all necessary documentation, and the documentation will be sufficient to support the need for the equipment or services provided. And here to summarize our education and prepare us for questions and answers is Amy Capice from Jurisdiction A. Amy?
Thank you, Denise. I'm Amy Capice, the Provider Customer Service Program Manager for NHIC, your Jurisdiction A DME MAC. On slide 34, as we conclude our CERT education and prepare for questions, we want to remind you that improvement in CERT results requires each of you to take action. You've heard a lot of information during the presentation today, and one of the things that has been repeated several times is it is highly recommended that you obtain all related medical records early in the process. All DME MACs will have a suggested intake form on their website to help ensure the records you receive and retain are complete, legible, signed, and contain all information, including the front and back pages of all support documentation. It is very important that you respond to CERT requests. Failure to respond is not acceptable and only delays the resolution of the error. It is best for you to retain documentation for at least 7 years. Finally, always keep your information current. You may update your contact information at www.certprovider.org. And if you need assistance to update your information, you may call the CERT documentation contractor at 301-957-2000.
2380 or toll free at 1-888-779-7477. We have provided you with all website and telephone numbers from this call on the last two slides of the presentation. Slides 35 and 36. Each of your DME MAC contractors has extensive information on the CERT program, including customized education. We encourage you to visit our websites and to sign up for our listserv so you receive updates on new information and education that is available. And we have provided details on each of the DME MAC's websites on slides 35 and 36. Slide 37. That concludes this portion of our CERT education. And before we open the lines up for your questions and comments, we would like to respond to some of the questions we received in advance of today's call. Prior to today's call, we received an excess of 100 pre-submitted questions. And certainly while we would like to verbally respond to all of them, we simply did not have the time on today's call. We did do our best to try to address as many as possible as part of our presentation today. And we will also be publishing an extensive list of questions and answers on all of our contractor websites, along with an encore audio presentation of the call. So please be sure to monitor your listserv messages for the publication date and information. Several of you asked what the reasoning was for the recent reviews. As Shauna Olson from CMS mentioned at the beginning of our presentation, all of us are tasked with reducing waste, fraud, and abuse of the program. Increased reviews provide CMS with information needed to monitor errors so they can decrease improper payments from the Medicare Trust Fund. Slide 39. Another common question, we received several questions regarding the key elements discussed during a review. The best thing to remember is to have complete documentation to support the medical necessity and proof that the coverage criteria is met. We cannot emphasize that enough. Also, be sure to illustrate that appropriate codes and guidelines have been followed. On slide 40, perhaps the most common question that was asked was how to respond to requests for documentation that is not listed in the LCD, or the local coverage determination. Documentation is your best friend. At the core of the program is a requirement included in the Social Security Act that says that it is expected that a patient's medical record reflect the need for the care provided. At the most basic level of everything you do, document, document, document. And again, cannot emphasize that enough. On slide 41, we want to thank you for the pre-submitted questions. As a reminder, we will publish an extensive list of the responses to all the questions that were received on all the DME MAC contractor websites. We will now prepare for your questions. Please be sure when asking questions verbally to identify yourself and tell us who your contractor is before asking your question. Please just be sure to identify in which jurisdiction you are so that we can appropriately answer your question. As a reminder, we do not have medical directors on today's call, so we will not be able to respond to questions regarding LCDs or coverage determinations. We also cannot respond to claim-specific issues you may be having. So as a reminder, you should reach out to your contractor contact center for assistance with those types of questions. Now, so that we may take our remaining time to answer some of your questions, we will ask our operator to guide you through that process.
We will now open the lines for a question and answer session. To ask a question, please press star followed by the number 1 on your touch-tone phone. To remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Please state your name and organization prior to asking a question. Also, please pick up your handset before asking a question to ensure clarity. Please note your line will remain open during the time you are asking a question, so anything you say or any background noise will be heard in the conference. Your first question comes from the line of Victor Lopez. Your line is now open.
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
We can. Hello.
Yes, Victor Lopez with Hartman Brothers Incorporated. We are a provider in Colorado, use Cigna Government Services, and we're claims go to the DME MAC Region C. The question that I have is a situation where there's been a change request or some kind of documentation that alters the LCDs. somewhat, the scenario would be the new reasonable useful lifetime. Those particular, especially with oxygen, those claims sent in with the first month of RRRA modifiers. We've run into a situation where they didn't want to budge on the fact that the patient had not been seen and the testing had not been done within the 30-day window, and yet there was a change request in other direction from CMS that stated that that wasn't required in that particular situation. How should that be addressed?
Hi, Victor. This is James Herron. How are you doing?
Good, James. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. Let me make sure I do understand. You're referring to the replacement of oxygen when there's been the 5 years reasonable useful lifetime has ended and you are then replacing oxygen. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And really there, you know, that is correct. In that situation, and, you know, specifically speaking to the 5 years, you are not required to have a retest by the physician. All you would simply have to do is have the physician complete a new CMN, and you could treat that really as an administrative document. Your medical need was already established with your first CMN set, which would be your initial and your research, and now after 5 years, you are just, you know, re-upping that for another, you know, reasonable useful lifetime period. So all you'd need to do is just have your administrative document, which would be that initial CMN, which then would need to be recerted at whatever the particular time frame is. Are you speaking more to concerns about education on that?
Well, my main concern is in a CERT audit, when that scenario arises, are the people that are looking, CRCs or these particular people that are doing the CERT audits, how up to date are they on the changes that CMS is making? Because, I mean, this is a moving target and this program changes frequently, and it seems like sometimes there's this disconnect between what CMS has said and how the providers are doing it and what they're requesting.
That's a good question, Victor. Thank you. But as far as the level of, you know, like say on target with CMS, the CERT review contractors and the CERT contractors in general are, you know, they are aware of all of the rules then, you know, in place by Medicare, so they should be right on target with that.
Okay. That answers it. Thank you.
Thank you, Victor.
Your next question comes from the line of Gary Francisco. Your line is now open.
Thank you. My name is Jerry Francisco, and I am representing Apria Healthcare, and we bill for all four DME MACs. And my question is in reference to specifically the oxygen claims that are being audited through the CERT program. This is a two-part question. And firstly is, sometimes we would have patients in which the initial CMN was done 11 years ago, say in 1999, and of course the date of the test was in that time frame. It was recertified, therefore, in 2000, and we receive a CERT request today for a current date of service, for example. Let's say it's for the oxygen fills. So therefore, part of the question or part of the CERT request would be a copy of the test. And oftentimes when we go to the physician's office, they say that they do not retain records from that far, from that time frame. So we would like to find out, how is that type of a denial? Because what will happen is that we will get a recoupment. We would like to know if that is a denial that can be appealed when it is beyond our control, since the physician's office doesn't have them. And then the second part of this question is, again, in reference to the oxygen CERT audit, the request has different components. There are many elements to their request, such as a copy of the initial evaluation, the re-evaluation, the initial and recert CMNs, the continued usage, etc. So let's say there are 7 pieces of information being asked. If we provide 5 of 7, then chances are we will receive a recoupment. My question to that second part is, how we are not receiving, or should we be receiving something from CERT specifically telling us that we were denied because out of the 7 elements being requested, we only responded to 5 and we are missing the 2. And those 2 are as follows. Currently, we simply assume that maybe we are getting denied because possibly we were not able to submit element A. Thank you very much.
Hi, Jerry. This is James Heron. How are you doing?
I'm fine, James.
Jerry, just to go over this, to go over to your second point there, I do believe that when you do receive a notification of a denial from the CERT contractor, it's going to be through an overpayment request from your MAC contractor, whether it be jurisdiction C, A, B, or D. That's really how you're going to receive your notification. Okay, to your first question, do understand, you know, that you have those concerns. But as we have stated in the slides before, you know, that is part of the CERT program is to determine whether or not medical records are there. And as, I'm sitting here drawing a blank right now, and she's going to kill me. Amy Capice noted in Amy's piece, she said, you know, the documentation is the key now going forward. So you really do need to document, as Amy said. Can be, you know, a little time-consuming and so forth when you're looking at something that's so that you feel is old like that. But I do, you know, remember that, you know, there are appeal rights to a CERT request, and if you feel that something is done in error, and, you know, or you feel like you need to appeal that, then absolutely you do have appeal rights.
Thank you very much, James.
Thank you, Jerry.
Your next question comes from Teresa Canfield. Your line is now open.
Okay. I'm with Teresa Canfield. I'm with Pacific Pulmonary Services. And I wanted to inquire specifically related to the physician medical records. As a provider, we do not have control over what a physician documents or doesn't document in their medical records. At the same time, CERT is holding us accountable for the lack of physician documentation. And to the point of medical record documentation and a length of retention, currently the length of retention is 7 years. So if the CERT is asking for medical record documentation that would possibly go back before 7 years or longer than 7 years, how, as a supplier, can we control the fact that a physician no longer has that documentation and isn't legally required to have it or retain it because it's been greater than 7 years? That's my first concern. My second concern is that as a supplier, we are educated by the LCDs and the Program Integrity Manual. We understand that the physician should document in the medical record the patient's signs, symptoms, and what would warrant the need for that piece of equipment. We understand that. At the same time, based on previous experience, and in pulling and requesting those medical records from the physicians, we are finding that they may or may not document anything about ongoing medical need for oxygen, for enteral nutrition, for any type of equipment. The patient can be walking into that physician's office with oxygen on, and yet that physician does not document in that history or physical for that day that the patient entered the office with their O2 on at 2 liters. What we're finding is they document the initial assessment, they document at the time of the research, and that's pretty much it. The rest of the time, that physician is documenting only about the patient's current ailment. So my biggest question and the biggest concern in the provider community, and we bill all four of the DME MACs, is how can we be held accountable for what is documented in the physician's medical record when they have not been educated about our policies and procedures related to medical equipment as to what their progress notes should include. Thank you.
Thank you, Teresa. Of our presentation, or of our presenters today, Amy, would you like to perhaps start with a response on this one? Because I know we have some additional information in Jurisdiction C as well.
Okay, hi, this is Amy Capice. Just to start the response, and it's probably not what you're going to want to hear, you're not going to like what I'm about to say, but it truly is the responsibility, again, of the supplier to have the information in your file and readily accessible and available to support the medical need and the criteria for the equipment you are providing. So again, in part of the presentation, we highly recommend that when you take on a patient, you make sure that you have the documentation and the information for the medical support of the equipment that you are providing to that beneficiary. And John, I don't know if you said you had something additional to add to that.
Thank you, Amy, for that answer. And Therese, this is James Herron. How are you doing? But I just really want to say that, you know, I've spoken to our counterparts and our peers with Part B and their MACs, and the physicians are receiving education on proper documentation, working with DME MACs or working with durable medical equipment companies in the sense that you are providing care for a beneficiary. So to ensure the beneficiary can get that equipment and maintain and keep that equipment, doctors do need to document, and also physicians are receiving CERT audits as well. So, you know, it is ongoing, and I do hope it gets better. So thank you, Teresa, for the question.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Christina Bradley. Your line is now open.
Yes, this is George Rosie from Monroe Medical, and we file to all of the DMERCs. And I agree with the lady that was on there just a minute ago. I believe her name was Amy. It seems to me that the CERT program is placing all the responsibility on the providers to talk back to these physicians and to train these physicians. And who are we to question what the physician is putting in the patient's chart? I just don't understand this. It seems like we're going around backwards on this whole thing. That the physicians need training probably more than what we do. So I'm kind of confused on this. I know we've had five certs or five what?
Five
audits. We furnish the information, and they come back denied. So I'm kind of lost in this whole thing. We've had the accreditation team in our office. They said we're good to go. We've complied with all the Medicare standards, with all the getting bonded and everything. And now we're coming out with this, where you could look at any kind of filing and say, well, they're missing this, and then just recoup the money or either throw it out. I mean, we're already working on a very small budget. When you go to competitive bidding and you look at some of these companies, I mean, we're already working within a 30% area, and now you want us to document, which means hiring more and more people. It just seems like it seems like a government program that is just destined for failure, at least for the suppliers, and I don't understand that. That's my question.
Do we have any presenters who would like to feedback to the gentleman's question?
This is Jody from Noridian Jurisdiction D, and I just want to kind of reiterate in a different way what Amy had mentioned. It's really important to do a thorough intake process and to know what documentation exists, because you may need to have that documentation to protect yourself from liability because the beneficiary doesn't qualify for the piece of equipment. So documentation, again, is so incredibly important, and knowing that you have that information ahead of time. I know all jurisdictions have, or at least our jurisdiction does have, a documentation checklist. There's documentation information indicated in the LCDs. But working with your referral resources or sources explaining to them. They get CERT audits as well. They get audited from a Part A and Part B. So they're aware of the documentation requirements, and like James had mentioned, we are working with our local Part A and Part B carriers to enforce the documentation need in the DME community.
Jody, thank you. This is Amy Capice again, just to follow up a little bit on James and Jody's statements. We are very much aware that there is a challenge with educating the physicians and just, where that lies. And as we have reiterated, and it stands at right now, it is the supplier's responsibility to obtain the documentation that's needed for the medical need of the equipment, to educate the supplier, the physician's office, and the physician and the physician office staff as to what and why you need this information and why things have to be documented. And again, as James and I believe Jody mentioned, we as contractors are doing what we can to reach out more to the other jurisdictions and Part B contractors to try to at least network and disperse more information about the policies and things to the physician community. And that is where we are right now with this type of issue. We do hear this quite often, so you're not alone in thinking that. I'm sure you know that.
Right. This is still George with Bonneville Medical. My issue is that we service patients, and it's a one-time. It's not oxygen, diabetic supplies, or anything like that. And I just don't understand how, early in your presentation, you listed the seven pieces of seven elements there, and then at the very end, you said none of those are needed because of the physician's notes. So the importance of the physician's notes is paramount above everything else. So if we do everything right and then the physician turns around and doesn't document it in his records, then we get turned down. And that just does not seem fair. Is it?
Again, this is Jody at Noridian, and having that seven-element order, if you're referring to a PMD or any other type of detailed written order, is important prior to submitting a claim or dispensing, but it's got to be backed up with the medical records. And you knowing and asking that question as soon as that beneficiary walks into your place of business saying, okay, who's your physician? Make yourself a little checklist or a suggested intake form of your own to ask all the pertinent questions that you know that the CERT audit or any other audit may come back to you and ask for. Medical records, what is documented in your medical records? Have a conversation with the physician. Act like a partner with that physician in making sure that the beneficiary is going to get that item that they need and get it paid for as it should be paid for by Medicare.
So what you're telling me is to have a conversation with the patient or with the physician?
Well, you're going to have a thorough intake process asking all the specific questions. Obviously, you're going to need to have, at the very minimum, a dispensing order before you can dispense anything.
Absolutely. And we've been checked with this accreditation team. We have those kind of things. But if you talk to most of the Medicare recipients out there, they can't even tell you what program they're under.
Right.
So they have no clue on what's being documented in their records.
As soon as you get that information, who the ordering physician is, give them a call. Find out what's in the
Well,
records.
We do that. We
right.
do that. But I reckon what I'm really trying to say is that through these audits that we've been given, they come back denied. And we're doing the very best we can out here, but they're being denied based on lack of information in the physician's records. So why are the suppliers being punished for what the physicians are writing in their records? Most of these physicians out there, which I'm sure you're well aware of, are primary care physicians, urologists. These types of physicians see 50, 60, 70 patients a day. They're going to take the shortcut. They're not thinking about us, but yet we're the ones having to pay the price for it.
I understand your frustration, George.
It really is frustrating to us because we try to do everything that is right, and it just does not seem fair that we go through all this work and everything. I mean, the patient's record, just to get a one piece of equipment from us, a patient's record is almost an inch thick, okay? That's a lot of paper. And then for the CERT program to come back and go, well, the physician didn't document his records right, so we're going to recoup the money from you. But the patient gets to keep the equipment. I don't understand that.
George, John Kelly, I'm monitoring the call. I appreciate your questions, and out of respect for others who are still waiting to ask some, I'd like to ask that we move on to take those questions, and perhaps you could reach back out to us, and we can.
Oh, I will.
A bit more. Okay.
Uh huh.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Your next question comes from the line of Mary Murphy. Your line is now open.
My question's already been answered. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Kathleen Farragan. Your line is now open.
During the conference, they used the word 75 days in which to return a CERT request. Did I hear that correctly? Because on my CERTs, they're saying 30 days, and I even got one from Region A for 3 days. Or maybe they dropped the zero.
Kathleen, hi, this is Becky. Which jurisdiction do you normally bill through?
Probably normally D, but actually we go through all four.
Okay, Kathleen, the 75 days is correct from the initial request. There are follow-up letters that come out if they do not get the documentation within that
right.
75 days, and some of those you may be seeing some varied time frames. But the normal process and the normal time frame for the CERT request is 75 days.
So the initial CERT request is 75 days.
That's correct.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Your next question comes from Karen Corson. Your line is now open.
Okay. I think I have a couple questions, but I'll try and get in the one that's most important to me at the time. Seems like we're receiving a lot of CERT audits for patients that are tested during sleep. And my question is, are the people that are reviewing these CERT audits understanding that a patient that has obstructive sleep apnea that requires oxygen while they are sleeping are going to have perfectly normal O2 sats during the day when they're at the doctor's office? Because they only require oxygen when they're sleeping.
Karen, hi, this is James Heron with Jurisdiction C. I apologize. Can you restate that? Cause you had, I guess, are you saying that they're testing during sleep, but they're, I'm not following, is it you're saying that you're qualifying them while they're asleep and that the CERT contractor is looking at it from a standpoint of qualification while they're awake? I apologize, I didn't understand the question.
Yes. Now, these are patients that are tested during sleep because they have obstructive sleep apnea and require oxygen during sleep time only.
Okay.
When we send in our physician's notes, which are the patients see their physicians during the day, and they'll show a 90% O2 sat, or they'll show, you know, O2 sats that are in normal range because they are being tested in a doctor's office during the day, and we're being rejected because the patients have qualifying sats. They don't, however, qualify when they're sleeping. They're desatting down into the 50s and the 60s, and we're having difficulty getting that understood. Is that something that is commonly misunderstood?
Well, Karen, let me say this. The CERT review contractor who reviews the information, they are staffed with medically trained personnel, so they do understand that. I guess the key there is making sure you submit to them the documentation that justifies the need for the oxygen based upon why the patient has the oxygen. So if there are no notes that would justify, or there are no records from the physician that justify the need for the oxygen as it is billed to Medicare or as it is deemed as they need it, then that can be problematic for you. So you do need to make sure that the documentation you have justifies the need for the oxygen as the patient is using it in the home.
I understand that, and we are doing that. We have sleep studies that qualify. We have continuing notes that indicate that the patient has obstructive sleep apnea, is on a CPAP machine, is being treated with oxygen at night. But they're seem to be holding us on these qualifying sats that happen during the day.
Okay. Thank you for that, Karen. And I just want to reiterate, as I'd said before, if you do feel like there was a cert, you have a denial that's done, you don't agree with it, or you feel that you feel it was an error, you do have the appeal rights just as you would if any other denial, if it came from a DME MAC. So I would highly recommend that you know, follow your appeal rights in this case.
We're certainly doing that. May I ask one more question?
Yes, go ahead, quickly, please.
To constitute continued use, particularly like with a nebulizer and nebulizer medications, doesn't the ongoing annual prescriptions and continued shipment of nebulizer drugs indicate continued use?
That's a good question, Karen. And yeah, I mean, I can certainly see where you're coming from that. But again, that does go back to medical records and medical documentation from a physician that would indicate the continued need for that item. Okay. Thank you, Karen.
John, this is Shauna. May I just interrupt for one moment?
Absolutely, Shauna.
This is Shauna Olshan at CMS. I just received some clarification by email, actually, from our CERT experts about the prior question about the 75 days. I just wanted to clarify the response. Our CERT expert just pointed out to me the initial letter gives 30 days to return documentation. If the documentation is not received within 75 days, the claim is denied for no documentation. So the letter says 30 days, but if you don't send it within 75, you'll be denied. So I hope that clarification helps.
Shauna, thank you for the clarification. We appreciate that.
Your next question comes from Laura Molina. Your line is now open.
Hi, my name is Jim Fisher from Region D.
Hi,
Jim. My question is, who's responsible if the patient dies, the physician or the supplier?
Did you say Region B or Region D, Jim? I'm sorry.
Region D.
D, all right.
D is in Doug.
Yeah, Jody, I think that one's yours.
That would be mine, James. Hey, Jim, if a beneficiary dies, your Medicare will pay up until the date of death. As far as what is your specific question? Who's responsible for?
My question is, due to lack of documentation from the physician for the supplier to provide treatment, the patient dies. Who is responsible? Who's liable? The physician or the supplier?
Because of use of the equipment? I guess I'm just not getting the question. I'm sorry.
The physician wants the supplier to provide let's say, oxygen, but there's lack of documentation, and the supplier doesn't provide the equipment because they're not going to get paid. The patient dies. Who is responsible? Who is liable, the physician or the supplier?
Yeah, that would kind of be outside. That would be more of a legal issue that you would want to ask. As far as your business practice decisions and who you dispense equipment to, and the reason you dispense equipment is going to be something that you determine. If you determine that the beneficiary doesn't meet the coverage criteria and you don't want to service that beneficiary, you can send them on to the next supplier or do whatever your business, you know, would want you to do.
And what's that supplier supposed to do?
If you don't take a patient, what is that supplier supposed to do?
Well, if the documentation isn't there, who's wrong?
Well, the documentation needs to be there before you actually dispense the equipment, or I would suggest the documentation is there before you dispense the equipment.
I feel like we're doing your job with the physicians.
You as suppliers are expected to know the policies and the procedures and the rules and regs. There are very specific coverage criteria listed in each LCD or the policy article. Knowing those and then doing your thorough intake process to make sure that exists is very, very important.
I feel the physicians would rather hear this coming from you than from the supplier. And I think they would be more compliant if this was coming from you directly to them in a meeting like this rather than the supplier.
Thank you, Jim. But we actually do create physician letters. I know that we have some on our particular website under our coverage and MR tab, where our medical director, Dr. Witten, had actually composed some to help assist you and use as a tool to get that medical justification.
Can we get a link to the PowerPoint slides?
They are on each contractor's website on Noridian's. It's under the Training and Events tab under Presentations.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. We have time for one more question, please.
Your last question comes from Nicole Bailey. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Nicole from GAMI Home Care Region D in Hawaii. Is the question about, I think one of the first callers, the CERT people are asking for documentation from 11 years ago, but you folks stated that you only require us to keep information like that on file for 7. From this point on, is CERT going to continue to ask for documents or documentation past 7 years with that point being brought up?
Thank you for your question. Shauna, is this something that you might be able to contribute to?
Well, on the face of it, I can't. It's the provider outreach, but it's something that we will definitely take back and look into, because 11 years does seem long. So we will look into that and get answers
okay.
out to all 4 DME Max that they can put on their website.
Great. Thank you.
Great. And my last question, are electronic signatures from patients acceptable on delivery tickets?
Jody, do you want to go ahead and take that one?
It seems like everything's switching more to electronic means. For proof of delivery electronic signature, like when FedEx comes out and has them sign that electronic box?
Yes,
that would be acceptable.
That's all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everybody. I know you have lots of questions, and I wish we had several more hours to stay on the line to address them, but we simply can't do that in this forum. I do want to remind you that we will be publishing an extensive list of all of the questions, not only of the questions you've asked during this call, but also the over 150 questions that we received in advance of today's call. So be watching. Those will publish when we release the encore presentation in the next week or two to all DME Mac websites. If you have not already done so, please sign up for the listserv for your specific jurisdiction or contractor so that we can be sure to alert you when that information is published. If you do have additional questions regarding the CERT program, I'd like to again remind you that all DME MAC contractor outreach and education units have extensive education information and instruction available on their websites, so please visit those websites for additional information. And we will also provide you, again, responses to questions where I think you'll find additional answers to some of those areas or questions that have been raised today. Your DME MAC CERT Education Task Force would like to thank you for your feedback on today's education. We would like to hear from you in terms of if this education is beneficial to you. So in the next several days, you'll be receiving an email from the CERT Task Force asking you to complete a brief survey to let us know what you thought about today's forum and make recommendations for additional education and information that would be of importance to you. So we'd appreciate your response so we may continue to develop meaningful education for you on the CERT program. On behalf of the DME MAC CERT Education Task Force, we would like to thank CMS for their participation and support of this initiative, and we would like to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedules today to join us. Thank you and have a great day.
This concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.